Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We're going to talk about Albany this hour. We're going to talk about a very unusual, uncommon economic indicator, and that is taking vacant luxury housing. Who heard of vacant luxury housing in New York City? But there is some now, and Assemblyman Hakeem Jeffries has a plan to turn some of it into affordable housing. So we'll talk about that. And as I've said, we're going to keep taking phone calls and sprinkling them in through the rest of the show from some of our listeners who have recently lost your job so you don't become invisible in our society or inaudible. And let's do another couple of those right now. Linda in Nutley, you're on WNYC. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Brian.
What job did you lose?
I just lost, we were just informed last month that I'd be losing my job as investment officer with Wachovia Wells Fargo in the Equity Strategies Group. So they took us all out in Morristown and Philadelphia, and they're putting that job in North Carolina. That kind of gives us all a bad taste in our mouth because they're taking away.
I guess so. Did they give you the chance of going to North Carolina and keeping the job?
No, they didn't. They didn't. And we're up in the hub here by New York, so that doesn't sit well with any of us. I've been at the job for 21 years, as has most of us in the group. Well, a lot of us have been there 15, 20 years. So it is a shock.
And you said you were aggravated with them because they were what?
Well, because they moved us from the hub. We're near New York, as you know, and they're moving all of that down to North Carolina. So a lot of our clients who have known us for a long time are going to be dismayed and disheartened and probably leave the company, I would think. And now our partners, who are the other people that work with us on the trust account, are going to have to get used to entirely new people.
Let me ask you one thing before you go. Did you sign up for COBRA yet?
Not yet, but it is coming.
Did they tell you how much it's going to cost for the plan?
No.
All right, Linda, good luck.
Thank you.
And
bye.
Arthur in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Arthur. What job did you lose?
Well, I'm closing one of my businesses on Wednesday. It has 5 employees.
You can hear the economy nipping at your heels right there.
Yeah, and I'm in a financial district.
Arthur, so what kind of business did you close?
It's a pub. I'm getting evicted. It was like a perfect storm. They put scaffolding up around the building. Everybody in the neighborhood got laid off because it's right by the stock exchange. And
I heard that despite the economy going down, commercial rents are still going up in New York. Did that happen to you?
I think that's what they want to do, because my rent's pretty low, and they're not accepting my payment.
That's so interesting. Well, we'll ask Assemblyman Jeffries about that later on, too. If there are vacant luxury apartments in New York, we know there are vacant storefronts. We see the stores that are out of business and the for rent signs, and yet some commercial rents are going up. I don't really get it. Arthur, thank you. We'll take one more for now. Colin in Woodbury, you're on WNYC. Hi there.
Yeah, morning, Brian. I was laid off from the Rainbow Room after 21 years a couple of weeks ago.
Were you a waiter?
A bartender.
Uh-huh.
And Cipriani apparently had a fallout with Tishman Speyer, and it wasn't the business. We were doing fine, but they decided to give up the lease, and now we're just waiting to see what happens. But Rainbow Room is definitely closed at the moment.
Did you at least get a decent severance pay package?
Nothing
after 21 years?
We got nothing from Cipriani, not even a Christmas card the whole time we were there. It wasn't such a great relationship between the local six that were representing us and, the company. So
how long is the Rainbow Room closed?
Well, indefinitely.
I mean, how long has it been closed?
2 weeks now. The 21st, actually. Approximately 2 weeks, yeah.
Do you at least get COBRA health insurance? Can you buy into that?
Yes, we're doing that now. The union has helped us with that, and we get the 65% reduction, and that's a big help because we were covered through the union at Rainbow.
What does that cost with the 65% reduction?
If you don't take the complete thing, just hospitalization, it's about $300
per month
for a family. Yeah.
Per month. Okay, yeah. You get a free platform to express a political opinion. Take any issue. What do you want to say?
Healthcare. As you can probably tell, I'm British, so I think you need a national health service tomorrow.
Colin, thanks a lot for your call. We will keep taking phone calls from those of you who lost your jobs recently. But for right now, President Obama is the one in Russia today, but look who's talking about bringing back the Soviet Union.
If the Senate passes something that differs by one word or more, it is saying to the city, we want to resurrect the Soviet Union, we want to bring back chaos.
Mayor Bloomberg on June 25th warning about the possibility of rolling back mayoral control of the public schools, likening it to the Soviet Union. Well, say hello to the KGB. The stalemate in the state Senate has reverted control of the public schools to a 7-member Board of Education that the mayor does not control, at least for now. Meanwhile, Governor Patterson's people are in court today trying to get the Senate's pay docked while they refuse to vote on any bills. Let's see what's going on with WNYC education reporter Beth Fertig, Daily News political columnist Liz Benjamin, and Village Voice political columnist Tom Robbins. Good morning, all.
Hi.
Hey.
Good morning.
And Liz, if anything will get people back to work, maybe it's not getting paid. What's happening with that in court?
Well, that remains to be seen. We're going to see what happens today, of course. But there's already been a hold placed on these paychecks by the state comptroller, who was under fire by the Daily News in the Don't Pay the Bums campaign and told me today that was actually effective in getting a lot of people who weren't paying attention, perhaps, to state government. And he was getting an earful from people all over the state. So that's about $190,000 every 2 weeks, that payroll. And there's been a hold on that. Plus, you know, member items from past years, there's a hold on those. The governor has held them up, and per diems, too.
And Tom Robbins, here's an issue that unifies the Democratic and Republican senators, if nothing else will. They say passing legislation is not the only part of their job, so the governor has no legal right to block their pay. Think they have a point?
No. I don't think that the issue of paying these legislators or not paying them gets even close to the problem we've got in Albany right now. I think it's not a bad weapon for a governor who really knew how to focus in on the issue to use in his bully pulpit. But I think it's completely beside the point as to what the reason why we have a stalemate in the Senate.
Which, as you see, it is.
There's a power struggle going on between two different forces. One is mainly downstate Democrats who came in control of the Senate this January for the first time in 40 years and began promoting a number of pieces of legislation which were completely to the distaste of Albany's traditional power brokers, ranging from tenant reforms to the tax on the wealthy that was passed. And this June, those power brokers managed to put together a deal in which they simply bought off a couple of legislators who were willing to go over to the other side. And I think it's the wishes of the Republican establishment to try to stop this in its tracks and hold on, hopefully, through the 2010 election so they can control redistricting.
So, Liz, if you accept that analysis, I could argue that jockeying for power on behalf of the beliefs and the interests that each side represents is part of their job. That ugly as it is, this is democracy at work in a divided state, and there is no supreme ayatollah to tell them how to resolve it. Is that a fair way to look at it when deciding whether they should get paid?
Well, I mean, certainly they believe so. You know, look, this is not the first time this has happened. Even Governor Patterson has said that as well. The last time this went down, there was a 6-week stalemate, and it took intercession by the governor at the time with Nelson Rockefeller and the mayor, who I believe was Wagner at the time, in 1965. interceded and managed to break the stalemate. So it's not like this has never happened before. Part of this is about, you know, the democratic process. And I think voters, I mean, as much as I don't want to chastise people, if they're upset, then they should vote. I mean, you have people who don't go to the polls and then they complain. So you have 98% reelection rate in Albany. We call it, we joke sort of in a black kind of comedy way, as the incumbency protection program in Albany.
Of course,
you know, if you're upset, vote out your local guy.
Right. Though the next state Senate election isn't until over a year from now. And in the meantime, nothing's going on allowing the state, the counties and cities to get their July budgets on track. And WNYC's Beth Fertig, as we know, mayoral control of the public schools in New York City has expired. You spoke today to the new Democratic leader, John Sampson. Is that correct?
No, I tried to. I reached out to his spokespeople because the New York Post today was reporting that there is a deal to pass mayoral control of the schools just as it was in the assembly, which pretty much preserves things the way they are, but it also puts a couple of checks and balances on the mayor by having the independent budget office look at data and, you know, look at, do assessments of what's going on in the schools. And there would also be a bit of notification if schools were to open or close or move. There'd be more checks on that. But John Sampson, who's the Democratic conference leader in the Senate right now, has been saying for some time that he wants to add more checks on the mayor's power, specifically the Panel for Educational Policy, which is what replaced the old Board of Ed, although we have a Board of Ed again right now, that 13-member policymaking board that's controlled by the member. John Sampson had wanted them to have
controlled by the mayor.
Right. He had wanted them to have fixed terms so that if any of those members disagreed with the mayor, they couldn't be fired at will. They would have a 2-year term. And last week, he came out and spoke to reporters after the law expired. And he was asked about, you know, what's going to happen next? What is it that you want? And he'd never mentioned these fixed terms, which was interesting. And the Post today is reporting that he's dropped that as a condition. So even though his people would not confirm to me today whether that story was true or false, there's still meetings going on with the lawmakers. What he did say last week was he emphasized what he does want, which is some sort of parent training institute. And I just want us to hear that for a moment right now.
We want to strengthen parents' roles in their local schools and empower district-level decision makers to facilitate speedy resolution to those parents' concerns. If parents are active in our public school systems by helping their children with not only homework, but going to parent conferences, we are making our children better.
And I just think that's interesting because, like I said, he didn't mention the fixed terms for the Panel for Educational Policy members, which was staunchly opposed by Mayor Bloomberg. That was one of the most controversial things that he was sticking to. But he played up this thing that sounds, you know, very mom and apple pie, Brian, you know, like more involvement for parents. How could anybody object to that? The parent groups in New York City who have been pushing for that want something like a parent training initiative, which would be several hundred thousand dollars a year to get parents more involved in their schools. I don't know if that's specifically what he's referring to, but I think that we could see something like that emerging that would be less of a sticking point.
So, Tom Robbins, if this Post report is right, then I guess the Senate would convene for one vote on one issue, and there'd be enough Democrats and Republicans agreeing to do this just to get mayoral control of the schools renewed, and then they'd go back to the stalemate. Do you have any idea whether that's the scenario and whether that's likely to come about?
I don't. I do know this, though. That, I mean, I think you hit it exactly on the head, Brian. Democracy is messy, and nothing should have been messier than the debate about the renewal of mayoral control. It's sort of amazing, the fact that the mayor has used his own bully pulpit, as you played that bit at the beginning, to try to sort of beat up the Senate into you must echo exactly what the Assembly's done. I mean, there had been some really crucial questions that have been raised just over the weekend in Liz's papers in the Daily News about some of the incredible confrontations between charter schools and public schools in Harlem, where the police had to be called about charter schools trying to take over classrooms. I mean, this has been the backstory which has remained unexplored pretty much in most of the press about this thing. And I think that Sampson, who I'm not a big fan of, has at least put this forward. If at this point he's managed to get a little leverage and he can get a deal, I think that would be a step forward to solving the Senate problem.
He also said last week that he will not, his members do not want mayoral control of the Senate. So he was very clear, you know, back off, Mayor Bloomberg. Don't try to push us around.
Liz, do you have any word as to whether this kind of temporary convening might be in the works?
Well, I think that one thing that you need to be careful about is, if I read the Post story correctly, supposedly there's a deal if and when the Senate, you know, ends its stalemate. And and it's difficult to say when that might be at this point, because as of last night, they were back to not being able to agree on how to meet. So, I mean, you know, there is, it seems like there are some small cracks that are occurring in various places where you see things like talk of what's going to happen after the stalemate, right? Or some kind of weakening in the Democratic side about not being able to accept Pedro Espada in some kind of leadership role, which was really a line in the sand for a lot of people. It's hopeful if they ever start talking about, that they even talk about what they might do when they're done, you know, at being at loggerheads. But I think everything goes in Albany, it's not over until it's over. So, you know, things come together and fall apart about 1,000 times. So when I see there's a deal on mayoral control, I'm like, right, okay, for this 5 minutes. I mean, who knows?
I have a question for you since you're up there, Liz. Is it sort of like a voir-dire process where you've got both sides going through who's acceptable? Like, we won't allow Pedro Espada, and then you can't have so-and-so.
Yeah, not really. I mean, I did hear something that I found really amazing, which was at one point the Senate Republicans were saying, you know, that power sharing meant, in the long term, meant it's not going to change regardless of what happens if there's any specials. So, for example, if Daryl Albertine, who's a North Country Democrat who won in a GOP-heavy district, if he decided to run for John McHugh's seat, for example, which is he's supposed to be vacating for an Obama administration post, and the Republicans won that, nevertheless, nothing would change. In other words, the power sharing would remain as it is, even though the seats change, the numbers change. You know, it would no longer be the deadlock 31-31. Or on the flip side, if one of the perhaps a little bit more advanced in age senators, you know, passed away or decided to retire, and a GOP senator, a Democrat won that seat, and yet nothing would change. I think that is, to me, really amazing that anybody ever even postulated that, that they said, no matter what happens, we want power sharing through 2010 because we're so certain that we're actually at some point going to end up in the minority.
It's crazy. So, Beth Fertig, what's actually happening with the schools? I mean, it's summer vacation, but who's running the show?
The new 7-member Board of Education is running the show, although they turned it over to Chancellor Joel Klein immediately. Yes, that was the first thing they did last week. By the way, that 7-member Board of Education appointed by the mayor and the borough presidents includes 3 deputy mayors.
And true profile and courage, wasn't it?
And what they had done was they basically decided, look, we don't want to upset things over the summer. We want to keep things going as is. It's just going to be too much chaos. All of the borough presidents agreed. Let's continue to keep Chancellor Klein in charge. And so they had their representatives who they picked. The Queensboro president, Helen Marshall, picked Deputy Mayor Dennis Walcott to be her representative to the panel. He does live in Queens. And the other members, the other borough presidents picked staffers, with the exception of the Bronx borough president, who picked a former Hostos Community College president. The first thing they did was they said, we're going to continue Klein's contract with everything. All the policies are up to him. Everything continues to be up to Joel Klein.
So, Tom Robbins, would you have rather seen them mix it up a little bit in this temporary moment of power and try to overthrow some apple carts?
Well, I think we might have had a shot at having a real debate, even if it was only for 15 minutes. I mean, I thought the fact that the woman that from Hostos that was appointed by the Bronx borough president abstained on a couple of these votes was interesting. I mean, I think that it's possible to have a legitimate debate about whether or not Joel Klein has been, you know, been in charge of this thing for the last 7 years, whether or not he's been totally beneficial, whether or not we want to give him a blank check. I think that, you know, New Yorkers are adults to the extent I think that they could handle that discussion without the world falling apart.
Now, Tom in Manhattan heard what you said, Liz Benjamin, about throwing the bums out and not giving them an automatic pass every time they come up for re-election in the state Senate. But he doesn't want to wait that long. Hi, Tom.
You
bet I don't want to wait that long. I want to know why Democrats in the Bronx aren't organizing a recall for the one guy who really is the responsible party here right now. The leadership in the Senate, it seems so weak to me when I see these people on TV. The ones that are doing most of the talking are oftentimes sort of unintelligible. What they're saying and this sort of stubborn, locking of horns, nothing's happening. We, the voters, need to gather and act and start a recall movement, and maybe that'll kick somebody in the pants and get them to do something.
Well,
put the fear of God in them, or
that'd
at least the fear of the voters.
We had recall, but we don't have recall in New York. What's that?
We can't even do it?
You don't have a recall mechanism here. I mean, you're talking about something that exists, for example, in California. You don't have that ability here. I mean, the way that you lose your seat other than an election is you die or you're convicted of a felony. You have to be convicted, not just indicted. You've had a number of people sitting around in seats who are indicted, and they're, for example, Hiram Montserrat, who was one of the people who sparked this whole thing,
although
he's back with the Democrats.
I did hear that you could be taken out if it was proven that you don't live in your district. Is that
true? Correct. Well,
he's talking about Pedro Espada living in the Bronx and in Westchester.
Yeah, but you know what? He beat a residency challenge during the election last year. I'm not defending him, and I know that they're investigating his residency again, but his people who defend him say, hey, we asked and answered this question last time around. But there's no recall is the specific. Yes, you can lose your seat, but there's no recall.
But the caller raises a terrific point, which is that, and this is the frustration I think that every New Yorker looking at this feels. And if you tally the numbers on Pedro Espada's election, he was really elected by the Democratic primary. He was up against an incumbent who was then under indictment and just about to plead guilty to embezzlement charges.
Right.
And the total number of voters that went to the polls was less than 1%. So Pedro Espada, roughly 5,000 votes, won by less than 0.5% of the registered Democrats who voted in that primary. And I called up the Democratic leadership at the time of that contest. I wrote a column about the fact this is like, Godzilla against King Kong. You can't be in favor of either one of these guys. They're both bums. And the Democratic Party stuck by Efrain Gonzalez, even though he was a complete loser, refusing to look to see whether or not there was real leadership that they could find in that district. I think, Tom from Manhattan, Tom from Brooklyn, I'm in favor of what you said. I think that, there ought to be a lot of people looking for new leaders right now.
And here we are with Pedro Espada elected in that way, freshman in the Senate, holding all the keys to who's in power.
He's a returnee, actually. He's not a freshman in the traditional sense of the word. I mean, he's been in and out of there a couple of times. And this is not the first time he's played games with the Republicans.
Right. All right. Well, guess what? We didn't resolve it this morning. I know that's shocking.
No, we did not.
But WNYC's Beth Fertig, Daily News political columnist Liz Benjamin, Village Voice political columnist Tom Robbins. We will keep following, of course.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC coming up in a minute. How's this for an uncommon economic indicator? A plan to take vacant luxury housing in New York and try to make it affordable. And we'll take more phone calls from some of you who recently lost your job. If you are recently unemployed, call us up right now. We'll put you right on the air. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. We know you're not just statistics out there. You're real human beings losing these jobs. We want to hear your voices. 212-433-9692.